again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast that answers the question, what if after hours, but less and worse? I am Daniel O'Brien, a writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, joined, as always, by Soren Bowie, a writer for American Dad with Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
American Dad with Soren Bowie, that famous show that you're all familiar with TBS. It's back on the air right now, actually. We had our premiere last night.
Oh, really? Did you guys do like a Zoom party for it or anything?
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, we did a Zoom party. Everybody got together and watched it. It was the sound. There's something about like when you try and show a video through Zoom that you lose some of the sound. And so like, I don't know what causes it, but you're losing dialogue along the way. And then everyone got together at the end. And of course, no one's talking because you don't want to be the only person in that entire room of 60 people talking. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of people staring at each other. But I did really enjoy getting a glimpse into the rooms of the people I work with.
So I have thoughts on that, but you go first. What are your takeaways?
If somebody's up against a wall, I'm almost mad at them. Yeah. They're not showing me what their place is like. There are some people working out of garages, which I felt were kindred spirits of mine. But there were some people who were in rooms that I couldn't describe because they're so full of stuff that I'm not sure what it functions as. And I have so many questions. They're like helmets and things like that in rooms.
I found myself because there are so many like shows that are filming via Zoom right now. And like people who are doing tremendously altruistic live stream events over Zoom or over Instagram Live to raise money for something. And I like that everyone's doing this, but I get so mad when it's clear that there's been no thought given to either the background or the placement of the laptop. Like when someone is clearly looking down on a laptop from some like, it's not even about like a flattering position versus an unflattering position. It's like, you know that you're on camera right now and like, I don't know, do something. Unless you're running around chasing a bunch of kids, which is very understandable. You don't have time to set up like a set or anything like that. You can do something. You can put a little effort into it. Put your computer on a stack of books so it's like at eye level with you.
Right. No, I totally agree with you. I even do Zooms for my son's preschool. And when I get him set up, there's a lot of, that goes into where I put the computer because I don't know. There's like weird economic things that I don't want to think about where if your computer is showing a section of your house that's like other parents would look at and be like, oh, that's opulent or like, oh, that's shitty. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very careful about where I do that. And also how I frame my son in it so that he's, you know, ready to do it. And there's always one family. And I know when they get on that their kid is, all I'm going to see is eyes and forehead.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just tilt it down. Like you set this up and then walked out of the room and you know, let me see your child.
Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Take the next step in your creative journey with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people on topics including illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, and more. Get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare by going to skillshare.com/QQ. That's skillshare.com/QQ. Can I tell you, I've mentioned before, depending on when these get released, I've either mentioned this on the last episode or I'm going to mention it on the next episode. But I've been taking a Zoom workout class through my apartment building. And some people have their cameras turned off, which is fine. You don't want to like let a bunch of people watch you silently work out. Some have them turned on, and that's fine too. I found there's one person who she has her camera turned on, doesn't do the workout, and just leans very close to the camera and watches the entire time. Smile planted on her face, unmoving. I want like the most generous read I can give of this situation, because that's what I want to do so it keeps my brain okay, is that she works for the building and she's monitoring the situation to make sure that everything is on the up and up. Because every single other possibility is uncomfortable. Just a strange woman watching a bunch of strangers work out.
That's wild. Take a but picture anyway, of her. I want to see your face.
I will. it'll be in the footnotes on the webpage. Oh, speaking of footnotes on the webpage, Bacon is again not here. He's been practicing self-quarantining like all of us have been. He is still engaged, still doing very well, and wishes you all the best. Definitely keep shouting at him on Twitter at MakeMeBaconPlease, PLS, and tell him that you miss him. I was very close to doing a quick question with Bacon and Daniel earlier this week because Soren forgot that we were going to record.
I felt so bad. I completely forgot we were going to record and I didn't respond. It wasn't like I forgot and then they were like, hey, where are you? And then I responded like, oh shit, I forgot. They waited for me. They asked where mm-hmm. I was. And then I would say maybe an hour and 45 minutes later, I said, oh shit, I forgot.
Yeah. Bacon and Gabe, our engineer and producer and editor, and I sat on the phone for a while, just like genuinely talking for like 45 minutes. And then like, hey, at some point, should we call Soren?
I felt so bad about that. I'm really sorry.
No. It was fine. And we're doing
that's
this
not
now.
My, that's great. Not my MO. I'm not that guy.
And like Bacon doesn't. No, you're not that guy. It's so much more. It seems so much more likely that I would forget than you would forget. And, you know, it was an Easter miracle that things went the other way. we're going to get into this show where two buddies ask each other questions. But before that, Soren wanted to address our listeners for the last time.
Yeah, our listeners who prefer to be called the Fast and the Curious.
Love it. I also realize that when I say for the last time, it probably sounds like you're quitting the podcast, which is not true. It just means that your 4-week run of coming up with the name of our listeners is over now. And thank you for doing that.
That was a lot of fun.
Very helpful for me.
Yeah.
And Fast and the Curious is good.
I appreciate it. So I was really worried because that it was good enough when I came up with it that I was like, Dan's done that one. I'm certain of it.
Nope, absolutely not. I think I leaned so hard into portmanteaus of either quick or question mm-hmm. that things like changing the title of something to curious, which isn't necessarily in the title of our show, but speaks to the nature of it, that didn't cross my radar exactly. But I like that.
I tried to draw a lot of water from the well of the word inquisitive and could not find anything there. It was so hard.
Did you, what was the closest that you got to?
I think it was a podcast that's inquisitive. And then briefly, I had another word. I had another word that sounded somewhat like it, but it meant it was not useful. It was like that we were contentious with each other. Oh. That wasn't true. And I was like, this one's going at the bottom of the list. Inquisitive was so like quiz you can get away with, but there aren't a lot of other words that sound like inquisitive.
No. Well, we're going to get into the show where we ask each other questions, but first we're going to just do our recurring segment, I guess now, where we just do a quarantine check-in. Soren, how is quarantine going for you?
Sucks. How about you?
Not great. I today had a thought that I'm so glad I didn't act on, but there's a chance it's going to happen in the future. I was singing along in my apartment. I've been listening to a whole lot more music in my apartment because I'm here more often. I'm usually more out and about. So I've just been like going through music and like dipping into some songs from my past and some new artists that I'm just becoming newly obsessed with and just like, well, I've got time to let me dig into all of Lake Street Dive's musicography and just like listen to all of it and be consumed by that. And then once I did that, I started listening to stuff that I listened to a bunch in college. And there's this one band called Moxie Fruvis, which is a very strange band that is like sometimes purely an a cappella band and sometimes a band with instruments, and their songs are wacky and sometimes serious. And it's like perfectly my shit in terms of an overlap of piano, harmonies, janky ass voices, and lyrics you don't hear everywhere else, which is, I think, the the Venn diagram of my music taste that I've mentioned on this podcast before.
Yeah, I solely at the heart of it is Ben Folds Five.
Yes, of course. And listening to Moxie Fruvis today, I was singing along to the bass part in one of their purely a cappella songs and was just like an ass hair away from tweeting, if anybody else out there knows the other parts of Gulf War by Moxie Fruvis and would like to get on a Zoom chat right now and sing them together, I would be down. I had to stop myself from doing that because that's an insane thing to do and would only invite madness. But in the moment, the idea of like singing with a group of people was very appealing to me, even though I'm not in a band right now. I'm not in an a cappella group and I don't go to shows enough where like I'm singing in a crowd of people that this is a reasonable itch that I would need scratched. I've just reached that point of quarantine where it's like, I want to sing with people. I want to do it right now.
That's really interesting. I wonder if, I mean, I never have that impulse, but it's also because I've had it beaten out of me. I know I'm not a good singer. And my mom, when I would sing when I was a child, would turn up the radio. But I think maybe I get it. When I drive around, I do a lot of singing to myself.
That's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask do you get to like take drives during the quarantine and either practice funny voices and accents? Because I know that you like to practice accents in the car or sing in the car, or are you like purely staying home all the time?
I stay home a lot more than I used to. When I do drive, I'm not in the same mood as I used to be, where I was like, oh, it'd be fun. It's like, let's try South African today. And so I don't sing nearly as much as I used to, but I still do it occasionally. But I don't feel like I've missed it either. I don't know how you possibly do it. You don't have anywhere you can just go sing.
I don't, no. And like, I can sing in my shower a little bit. And, you know, when I go for runs, I listen to music a lot and I will lip sync to what I'm listening to and
of course
imagine myself singing. Yeah. But yeah, no, otherwise nothing. I sing when I cook. I don't know why I say I don't sing a lot. Specifically when I cook, I'll throw on show tunes and just like completely shamelessly sing them while I'm cooking.
Well, that's good. That's a good place to do it.
And I don't think that makes me the most annoying neighbor on my floor for the coronavirus, because so many of my neighbors have taken this as an opportunity to leave their trash in the hallways.
Oh.
We have a garbage chute about 45 feet from my apartment, and my room is the furthest away from it, so it's closer for everyone else. But a bunch of my neighbors still, I don't know why, someone in the comments can explain to me why it's the safe thing to do to put your garbage bags in the hallway.
They don't want to go touch the trash thing. Oh,
but here's the thing, like, no one is going to do it for them. We don't have people who are going to come and throw out their garbage. It's just they will temporarily leave their garbage in the hallways and then do it later. So in the meantime, I just have to walk past a bunch of garbage.
Oh, it ruins everybody's day.
I know. And like, most days are already ruined.
Yeah.
You don't need to add on to it by just like forcing me to walk past garbage every day.
Let me ask you this about your singing, Dan.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's better.
I feel better about it. Yeah, I don't need this negativity. Do you ever just like pull up a song and you're like, maybe this is going to be my karaoke song. And so you just practice it over and over and over again, thinking when day comes, I'll pretend like I'm just like, oh, they have this song. Oh, I know that one. And you're just going to do it and you're going to nail it.
Yes. So my karaoke stuff is in, I'm still very like nervous and embarrassed about most karaoke, because when I don't have that thing in me where I'm really okay being accidentally bad in front of people, I guess, because like if you're picking a karaoke song and you're singing it in front of people, there, the subtext of that is like, oh, he thinks he sounds good on this. Let's see. And I know most people don't actually think that. I know most people are like, we're at karaoke and none of us are trained singers and just like, we're all friends. Let's be fine. But this is the way my brain works, is that I feel tremendous pressure to, if I'm going to present something, to make it seem like I really mean it. And I want to impress you. So the way that that manifests in karaoke is I often do songs where it's ironic or funny because I'm a coward. So I'll do Bust a Move or I Like Big Butts. You know, something where it's like, oh, even if he's bad at it, it's like funny that he's trying it. You know, it's
and
still entertaining.
It's got a lot of fast lyrics to it.
Yeah, but it's still like, it's not wildly impressive. And it's like, I can still wink and be like, I don't really think I sound good on this because it's silly that I'm even doing it to begin with. Yeah. Cause again, I'm a coward and I wanna have that ripcord that I can pull in karaoke with my friends. Where I was like, see, I wasn't too serious about it. I don't actually think I'm good. Like the entertaining part was how bad I am. Ha ha ha, bye. But
the irony parachute.
Right. But deep down I've been working on Let's Get It On very seriously for years as a karaoke cover, which I think is born from the reveal in the High Fidelity movie.
Yes.
When Jack Black sings it. And like we all know that Jack Black can sing now, but at the time, unless if you weren't a devoted Tenacious D fan, you just saw like a chubby weird metalhead and you had no reason to assume that he could sing well. So it was a great reveal in the movie when suddenly he busts out a near perfect Let's Get It On. And so I've been like trying to perfect that for a very long time. It's just at the top of my range, and it's also like it's a very long song with a lot of dead space, so you need to be comfortable with that dead space, and I'm not there yet, but you know, that's the hope one day. It's just like hanging out with coworkers and just like, ah, I guess I'll throw on this song because people like it, and just fucking nailing it.
Yeah, that's a really, really good one to surprise people with. I think that's a
yeah,
good choice.
Which I don't think I will like even vocally, if I can nail it, I still don't think it's a good fit for me because like there's an inherent sexiness to it that I can't pull off. Like Soren, right now, gun to your head. Picture me having sex. It's not cool, right? It's funny.
Yeah, but you guys are having a good time. It's just funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
But that's part of a charm of it, right? Is that you doing that song, you still have that irony out where it's like, I like that guy doing it.
Yeah.
Like you making the faces and stuff like that is
right.
Going to come across as funny. It's very different. If I did that song, it looks like a bro doing Let's Get It On, thinking about set, and like you immediately hate that guy.
Right, because you would use the time, I mean, not you specifically, but like a you type, would use the time in between verses and choruses in this dead space. You would be like being sexual, you know,
yeah.
Like air thrusting humps and like maybe even invite a woman from the crowd on stage that you can like try to seduce. Like that's a good move for a person. And I would be like earnestly counting the beats between verse and chorus in that time.
There's no winning for me to do a song like that.
It doesn't sound like there's winning for either of us. I don't think either of us should do that song ever.
All right, good, because there's no way I could pull that off. I'm not a great singer, so I would do a lot of the same stuff as you. I would choose I chose Funky Call Medina for a long time because it's Tone Loc, and
yeah.
I knew it as a child so well that I can do it backwards and forwards. But two Christmases ago, I pulled it out at a karaoke party at work and realized how awful the lyrics are, how like poorly they've dated. And so I can't do that song anymore. And then I started looking for another one, and I can just do Run Around Sue by Dion the Belmonts, which is a great song.
Okay.
And a very fun one to do on stage, but I can't always nail it. So it's risky. There's another one that this year I knew we were going to be doing karaoke at my office. I know that people are good there. I knew that I had like a really great song picked out that would be very, very good. And I practiced it a lot quietly by myself. And the day came and I chickened out.
Yeah.
And I never
did. See, like, much more than having a song that I could do really well, I would trade for the confidence to do a song kind of okay and not have it ruin my night. Like, I think I won't name him, but it's Brett. We both used to work with Brett and had a company Christmas party with karaoke, and he sang so many songs, and he doesn't have the best voice in the world, but he's like clearly comfortable in his own skin and having a good time and just getting up there and is like, I'm going to sing the Mariah Carey All I Want for Christmas Is You song. And he just does that. And like, no one's mad at him. And I can intellectualize that in the moment that, like, no one's mad at him. No one's going to be like, let's stay away from that guy for the rest of the night. But I can't be that guy.
No,
I can't just pop up and be like, look, I want to do this fucking Dave Matthews Band song, or I want to do another song that I think I sound kind of okay on, like this Hozier song or whatever. I can't do that. And I'm surprised that you can't, because you're a confident fella.
Yeah, I know where my limitations are, though, and singing is one of them. I'm not a good singer. I really have to practice at a song, and it has to be within a talky range for me to get it right.
We would like to again thank Skillshare, one of our sponsors. Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people. Explore new skills, deepen existing passions, and get lost in creativity. There are so many ways Skillshare's membership with meaning is valuable in this moment. Strong community is essential in times of hardship. Tap into the support of fellow creatives who provide encouragement, communication, and inspiration. You've heard me talk before about how I've been learning sign language and music theory and close-up hand magic. There are those classes and a lot of others that can help you with productivity, that can help you with entrepreneurship or creative writing or film and video or graphic design, or tons and tons of other classes that you can take. Skillshare is great for all of that. They offer creative classes designed for real life and all the circumstances that come with it. It's always the right time to stay inspired and express yourself and connect with a community of millions. And Soren recently started taking another Skillshare class. Soren, would you like to talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started taking a simple productivity one just because I started to feel like I couldn't write during this time. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that I was blaming it on the fact that my family was home, that my son was interrupting, that like I had to be in a particular headspace before I could even begin. And if I got interrupted from that, I had to start again from scratch. And from scratch usually meant like watching some YouTube videos until I was sick of it and I would write. And just taking a simple productivity class, I was learning that like, no, a lot of these leniencies that I'm giving myself aren't actually true. Like there's a way to get yourself into the right headspace for what you need to do every single day. And it was super valuable. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's been very useful to me as well. I mean, like I am used to having an office to go to and having tasks and just being home all the time, as we all are. And there's so much uncertainty about what you're supposed to be doing at any given moment. It's very helpful to have these classes that help break up that uncertainty and monotony. They give us all this sudden burst of creativity and community that have been very helpful. And you can explore your creativity and get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to Skillshare.com/QQ. I'm going to say it again just because we have, I think, the like easiest promo code in all of podcasting, Skillshare.com/QQ, to get 2 free months of premium membership today. Should we get into the show?
Oh, the show. Yeah. I got a quick question for you, Dan.
Oh, hit me.
Is there something in culture that you just swear you're responsible for? You know it's probably not true, but you feel pretty confident that you were either the first one to come up with it or someone came up with it because of you. I can go first here if you want.
No, I'm locked and loaded. I feel like, and I can say this not actually believing it to be true, but I do feel like I feel some responsibility for the widespread appreciation of Teddy Roosevelt as a badass icon on the internet specifically. I will never claim to be the first person who noticed that Theodore Roosevelt is cool. He's got like an unimpeachable pedigree and a lot of accomplishments and is broadly badass in any way that you would measure that. I started writing about presidents in 2007, 2008 on the internet in a specifically comedic way and a specifically focusing on traditional and now problematically defined badass aspects.
Yeah.
And this was at a particular time where that flavor of badassery was prevalent on the internet. So I certainly didn't invent that genre of things, but I'll look at an article I wrote in 2007 about badass presidents and the glorification of these hyper-masculine aspects of certain presidents. And I'll follow like a spread from that moment to a continuation of that idea, that I can in good conscience claim credit for, because I didn't invent either the part of Teddy Roosevelt that makes him badass or interesting, or the idea of glorifying these aspects of a person for comedic effect. All that said, in like my quietest moments, I do feel some amount of ownership over it, if not outright responsibility.
Yeah, well, you're contextualizing a history to give it a funny flavor or a funny hue.
Yeah. Which... I mean, the reason that I wrote my first book, How to Fight Presidents, and the reason that it, I think, sold at the time was there weren't a whole lot of other people that I knew of that were focused on the coolest, most superficially badass aspects of presidents.
Yes.
So, and
I think you're absolutely right. It's also like the most viewed article that you have. It changed the way that people talk about Teddy Roosevelt online. I think there's the same way that like Robert Brockway rewrote an article for our site in which he touted the honey badger, and then like the honey badger blew up in a lot of other quadrants online. And I think it originated, that seed was there because of Brockway.
Right.
And the context that he gave for an animal that just doesn't give a fuck was then pull everybody else like latched onto that, like, yes, of course. And then I think he sort of birthed that movement a little bit.
Oh, I think you want to be careful about that. Do I don't you, know if you know if you know his... if you know no it was his, but I don't know if you know where the movement has ended up.
No.
I'm not Googling right now, so I'm gonna fact check myself in a little bit, but Honey Badger certainly spread from an article that he edited and became like a big viral sensation, and there were t-shirts made. But I think fast forward a few years, Honey Badgers has become the nickname for the group of women who are adjacent to the men's rights activist movement.
Oh, damn it.
These are like pro-MRA women, call themselves the Honey Badgers. Let me actually... see if I know what I'm talking about now.
Well, there's still a honey badger who's a safety in the NFL. That's, I feel like that's okay.
This was because do you remember a couple years ago we were at the Calgary's version of Comic-Con, their comic expo, and there was a group of people who were banned for I don't want to give them the credit of saying that they were protesting. They just showed up to a bunch of panels, usually led by women, to ruin the panels.
To derail them. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
This was MRA and the Honey Badgers. Yeah, I'm looking at an article now from ABC. Meet the Honey Badgers, women who say women are oppressing men.
Okay, well, yeah. All right, so it got...
So you want to say that that's Brockway's legacy.
That is his legacy. Front to back, flawless legacy. No, I think you're probably right about about Teddy Roosevelt and just like the way that we think about presidents. Your conceit was that you'd have to be absolutely insane to want to be president. And then you follow the insanity of each of these men who were president and like pull out the details that are the most, that are the funnest to think about. And like things you just can't even get your head around, that they believed in mole people and stuff like that, or that they died of like eating too many cherries and drinking milk. That stuff is, it all works really well under the banner of like, this is a crazy person.
Yeah. In a way that I don't totally stand behind today, just because I was talking to a coworker earlier this morning who hadn't realized that I had written any books, which is great news for me as a self-promoter. and I had to qualify it with like, oh, I don't totally stand behind everything that I did in this book, because it was so focused on what we now understand as a toxic idea of masculinity, of just like badassery and not giving a shit. And like, I just have to qualify so much with like, yeah, there's like the Andrew Jackson chapter where I talk about how good he was at beating up assassins with a cane, and how he had a parrot pet that he trained to say curse words. And I did not mention the genocides, because that did not fit the spirit of the book that I was doing, which was just celebratory of badassery and quiet on problematic areas and dismissive of politicians that I personally didn't agree with.
Yeah.
It's not the most balanced book in the world that I don't mean to distance myself from.
But you're working in a time when like, in a time like it was like the 1950s,
way back in 2014.
You were working in a time when you trusted your audience to handle that sort of information well, like that they would be responsible with that sort of information. But there's like a weird thing that's happened culturally where the people that we labeled as badass because they were lunatics, that became like a behavior that people tried to emulate.
Yeah.
And in like, and assuming that was all sincere, and no one was sincere about that stuff. And so it's now you have to be way more careful in a way that like you are putting something out in the world. That's true. But you have to be careful that the audience that you're building isn't taking you at your word.
Right. I was writing about how it's cool that Rutherford B. Hayes was beating the shit out of people he didn't like, under the safe confines of a silly comedy book with well-drawn cartoons to illustrate and escalate how wacky all of this was. I don't want anyone to think that it was a roadmap for like, oh yeah, this is what a man is and this is what a man should do.
Right. I'm on board with you. You want to know what I created?
I do, yeah.
The electric toothbrush.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is so much better than anything I could have guessed. Why do you think that you created the electric toothbrush?
Because I fucking made one. Okay. So you remember back when you were a young kid in class, maybe you did like some sort of program where you would try and get, you'd create, that your teacher would give you foam and straws and things. And they'd be like, you got to make a car, and this car has to, whoever's car can go the fastest, we like with a sail on it, and whoever's car can go the fastest or the farthest, they win.
Yeah.
It was just teachers telling you, or they were going to be like, hey, you're going to get a bunch of coffee straws and organize them any way that you want, and we're going to hang eggs off of it. And whichever
egg
one.
Drop. Yeah.
The egg drop. Yeah. So I remember getting one of those little motors. That's just like a simple motor. It's just you touch two sides to a battery and the front spins, and you can put maybe an eraser on it and suddenly you have like a little fan. But I got one of those motors from, I think we were creating actual cars. I think we were creating little cars that had sails on them. And I remember thinking, you know what you could do? You could put bristles on the front of this and it would just circle, and you could do that on your teeth. They were not popular at the time. I was like 9 or 10.
Not popular or didn't exist?
Well, so I just went and looked at them. This isn't fair, though. They're from like the 1950s. Yeah, but they're certainly not popular. I wasn't aware of them. And my finger was on the pulse of culture when I was 9.
Right.
So
out in the woods thing. Where you got mail once every 3 months.
We had three channels of television that came in only when it wasn't snowing. So I was watching a lot of commercials, obviously. Right. And
you lived in a place where like the idea of a new toothbrush was actual news.
I remember going to Ben Franklin, which was our drugstore, and finding a toothbrush that looked like it had a head that was circular enough that I could take it home, ruin one of my dad's saws trying to cut it off. and then not kind of quite understanding how to get it on. And my brother helping me, and we have family friends too. It might have been one of them, but we put rubber cement in the back, and it did cycle. I mean, it was quite a mouthful. I'll tell you now, it was hard to get in your mouth, but you could do your front teeth with it as long as you just expose them.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is brilliant.
And like, it's just a prototype. Like it's allowed to be clunky. It's a prototype.
Yeah. I was like, I could make $1 million with this. And within a year, I started seeing them other places. And I just know in my heart that someone came to Carbondale, town of 8,000 people at the time, and saw this invention of mine. And they were like, by Jove, I've got it. And then they went off and sold it to Oral-B for millions of dollars. And now they're sitting pretty. And where am I? I'm in a garage listening to traffic and some sort of work being done outside.
It's crazy that even when people come to Carbondale, they're also in the past. They say things like, by Jove. It's just as soon as you cross county lines.
That's how we talked back then when I was 9. I swear to God, that's mine.
There's nothing like creatively on the internet or in writing that you feel like is uniquely yours? I'm trying to think.
Not really. I've sort of convinced the world that the tamarin monkey is called the Brockway monkey.
Oh, that's right. That's a good one.
That I've encouraged people to change all online encyclopedias because it has like a little mustache, and I thought that was really fitting. And now like National Geographic calls it on their Twitter channel, they call it a Brockway monkey, and Wikipedia has it for a while. But culturally, like pop culturally, I don't know that there really is, other than some of the stuff we've done through After Hours, which is a communal effort. Like that's right. Like the Pixar theory and that type of stuff. The theories that Ghostbusters is just a libertarian wet dream.
I do think, and there's no way to prove this, and it would be absurd to say that you're the first handsome person to ever do comedy. But just because the internet comedy landscape in the early, like the 2008 through 2015 world, where it was so much the dominion of scrawny, beardy, plaid-wearing folk, indoor cats. And then you emerged as a comedic voice who was also rudely handsome, I think, and rudely fit. I think that is a thing that you can take some ownership on. Like there was always like attractive comedy icons, certainly since forever. But we had settled on an idea of what an internet comedy writer looked like and what their past was and what their future would be. And you broke that mold in a way that I think others have taken advantage of.
That's very nice
of you
to say.
Like, very, without the necessary darkness, very analogous to Anthony Jeselnik. Because when he came out doing comedy, it was just like, no, I'm not one of these guys who's going to come out on stage with like a half beard and complain about my dick and how hard it is to date. I'm popular and powerful and cool and confident, and I'm going to own that on stage. I think that was a thing that you owned very much in your writing.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say. I probably cribbed something from Anthony Jeselnik. I probably stole some of that from people like him. That's very kind of you. I hope that's true. As you're saying it, I was thinking there is something that I know that I'm at least partially responsible for, and that's the now more popular or the rising popularity of naming a child Soren, just from being in the world, just from having that name that I didn't even get to choose and existing in a public space, like on a public forum where I was in front of a lot of different people and that name was exposed to a lot of different people. I noticed now there's a huge uptick in naming your child Soren.
Right. Just enough people who've been like, hey, that's an option.
Right. Just like, that's something to hang your hat on.
All right. I got a quick question for you.
Yeah, shoot.
And I'll go first on this one because I don't know. I'm not going to do a good job explaining it. Are there simple lessons you find yourself relearning over and over again? And I'm going to start with a household one for me that is like very simple and practical. My vanity, my medicine cabinet in my bathroom is above my toilet. There's mirrors that you push on to, and it opens, and then you can get your whatever out of there. You can get your razors and your deodorant, whatever you keep in there. And it's directly above my toilet. And I keep going into that medicine cabinet, grabbing something, knocking something out while I'm grabbing it. And then it falls into my open toilet. And I could put the lid on my toilet, but I've lived here for too long now, and I haven't made that adjustment. And it's one of those things, like the last time that I grabbed a bottle of Tums and accidentally knocked my nail clippers into the toilet, I said out loud alone in my apartment, what if I never learn? What if I just never... What if the lesson never takes root in my brain that was like, hey, Daniel, if you want something in the medicine cabinet, close the toilet so you don't drop anything in the toilet. I don't think that's going to happen. I think I'm going to keep doing this forever.
I'm laughing because I've run into the exact same thing in the past. But I get the benefit of actually having the toilet closed only because I did it out of spite. When I was first aware of the fact that you were supposed to put your toilet seat down after mm-hmm. you peed, because that's the polite thing to do. I was a young kid and rebelled against that, thinking cops don't own me. I can do what I want.
Right.
And so my idea was, listen, if they really want the toilet, if anybody wants the toilet seat down, I'm going to put both of them down. Then it looks way more attractive. You got a lid on there and everything. And then it became habit for me that whenever, after I go to the bathroom, I just put both of them down. And then at our old house, we had one of those vanities right above the toilet, and I would drop shit on there all the time. All the time. And it would have gone right in the toilet.
But you're smart and you're lucky.
I'm not smart. I think I'm just vengeful. I don't know what I was trying to prove. Also, I don't think anybody was like, shit, he got us.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, yes, thank you. Thank you for putting the toilet seat down.
I remember the toilet, we'll get back to this, but I remember the toilet seat thing being confusing to me, where I knew there was something you needed to do. And I remember being in either middle school or high school with a mixed group of friends, going to the bathroom, being like, oh, I have to lift the toilet seat up when I pee so I don't pee on the toilet seat. Good, I did that. And then left the bathroom thinking I did the right thing. And then a female friend went into that bathroom and was like, Dan, put the toilet seat down. And I was like, well, now I don't know. I put it up and down. That feels like I'm shouldering all of this burden at this point.
Look, yeah, I'm not going to clean the lint trap when I come up to the dryer and after I use it.
Right.
Surely I'm doing someone else's job. No, I'm with you. I was a kid, and I didn't understand sexism or anything yet. And I was just like, no, fuck you. Like, I'm not doing all the work.
Yeah.
Except then I ended up doing even more, which I guess is a lesson.
Yeah. It ended up saving you. It ended up, I mean, like, you surely buy fewer nail clippers than I do.
That's true. So you just throw that stuff away?
Depending on the state of the toilet.
Oh. Yeah, that's true. Okay, I get it. I might just see what happens if I flushed it at that point. But I the other day, I walked into my son's bathroom, and he was supposed to be in his bed. He's supposed to be sleeping. And I walk in and he's over in the bathroom and I'm like, what is he doing? And I see him in there, like using the sink and everything, and then going and drying his hands. I'm like, did he just wash his hands after going to the bathroom? And what had happened is he had a toy that he was playing with while he was peeing, dropped it in the toilet, reached in, grabbed it, and then went over to the sink and run it under the water for a little bit, and then did a heavy dry with the towel on it. And I was like, oh, okay. No, you can't do that.
I mean, that like, that seems like a pretty advanced understanding.
Yeah, I couldn't be mad at him.
Hygiene, yeah.
He knew that he was supposed to clean it off, and I was like, did you reach in the toilet and get that? And he said, no, it was floating. And I was like, okay.
Smart, good dodge.
Yeah. Touche, all right. We do need to clean it a little bit better than that. This thing has a lot of porousness to it. We have to get this clean. And then now we have to wash this towel as well. But I'm trying to think if there's anything that I mean, the one that immediately comes to mind is when I am in the kitchen, I'm really bad at cutting things, anything. Mm-hmm. It's chopping. I don't do it right. I don't do that fingernail thing where you just like crimp your fingernails like you have arthritis on top of the object that you're cutting so that if you accidentally drop the knife down, it's just going to slide off your nails.
Right. Or you put the blade on your knuckle and you never let the blade rise too high.
Yes. Yeah, right. I don't do any of that. I also, okay. If I cut a bagel, I'm cutting right into my hand every single time. I cut apples, holding it in my hand, cutting right. wedges out of the apple. And I do all the things you're not supposed to cut towards me. I do all the things you're never supposed to do.
That's exactly the kind of shit I'm talking about, where it's like, this isn't, you haven't gotten any new information. You shouldn't have been doing this. And then you get punished for it. And again, you have that shrug moment where it's like, it just might not be in the cards that I learned this. I might never get better. And we all have to accept it.
And every single time I do get punished for it by fate, my first thought is, I have to go to the hospital. I have to go. So I run it underwater to see how bad it is. But in my mind, I've cut off my hand finally. And I'm like, this was coming, man. This was definitely coming. And then I look at it and it's always, it looks like a paper cut. But I cut myself constantly in the kitchen, and then it translates into when I do like woodwork. Mm-hmm. I'm so bad about safety, and it's super dangerous there.
Yeah, you'll actually cut your hand off there.
Right. I try not to be, but I can get towards the end of like my cuts. If I'm making a lot of cuts on wood, it's always towards the end. I start to get lazy and I start to make really bad decisions around a table saw where like, I'll see it. If I cut off just like an inch off of something at the end and there's just a little nub that's bouncing around next to the blade, my first instinct is just be like, oh, I'll just grab that and get it out of there. And I have to actually stop myself. Like, no, you cannot do that. You have to wait till it stops.
Right. It's tough because it's the exact kind of thing where if I was in your shoes, I would also try to cut corners and go like the fast way. Then I would slice off my finger and have to go to a doctor and be like, there was no way around it. No one could have seen this coming.
Yeah, I guarantee that one of these days in the kitchen, certainly I will do enough damage to my hand that I'll need to go get an artery sewn up or whatever. And and they'll be like, what were you doing? And I'll have to be like, I was in a knife fight.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell the truth.
I can't go to a doctor and be like, yeah, I was slicing mushrooms on my belly. I'm sorry. It was just more comfortable. Thought I had control, didn't.
My son uses, he's really into Legos now. He can play with the tiny ones and he can build with the tiny ones, and that's a huge achievement to unlock. And when he's doing it, I notice that when he's got the two flat ones together or little tiny ones, he'll bite them off, like the little two prongers, he'll mm-hmm. bite at them to get them off. And I'm like, don't do that, you're gonna choke on those. How did you learn how to do that? And then I realized that now that he doesn't do it and he brings it to me and he's like, here, I can't get these two unstuck. I'm like, oh, I got it. Just bite into it. Oh, okay. That's fair.
Can I ask you, this is tangential, but when you're doing Legos, what is your process? What is the first thing that you do when you're building a new Lego thing?
Open it up. I don't even open up the bags yet because I want to make sure I'm using the right bag first. and then I go to the instructions. I figure out which bag they want me to use first, and I don't even open the other bags until I know that we're on that step.
Okay, so a writer that we both used to work with, very talented, Kathy Benjamin, she posted a picture recently of a Lego thing that she and her husband were doing, and how she resented the chaotic way that he approaches Legos, where he just puts everything in a pile and pulls from there. And she said, this is the only way to approach Legos. And she had every piece had been individually taken out and like joined together. So like 4-piece long reds were all in a pile of 4-piece long reds. It was very organized. Like here are the individual
blocks. Oh, she separated them by kind.
Yes, she separated by kind. Yes, correct. And that was her natural approach to Legos. And that is fully the opposite of my approach to Legos.
Yeah.
I want everything great. in a bucket, and I want to search for everything one by one.
Absolutely. Wait, so does she have it them in just like those, like you put dimes in a pile, you put quarters in a pile, like they're all in a pile together?
It's very aesthetically pleasing to look at. I understand the appeal of it. It's just not how I approach either Legos or puzzles.
Yeah. I think that might be crazy. Because I'm not a crazy person, but my way seems so much better for like a gut perspective. I do know what you mean. Like if I'm doing something freeform as a kid or with my son, I want to just pull from the bucket. I want to build as I go and be like, what's the piece I need next? Oh, I need one of these like angle ones. All right, I'm going to go find that.
Right. And the search is part of it.
Yeah. But yeah, with him, just because when we're building with him, I don't want to lose the pieces. So I won't even unbag anything. And when I open a bag, I have one very small hole in the bag. So if that bag then gets kicked around, it's not, Legos aren't flying all over the house. Oh. But we built a ship. I think it's Star-Lord ship from the Avengers.
Okay.
The Avengers from Guardians of the Galaxy. And it was ambitious. It was a big project and it's very cool. And within 3 days, it broke.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
I was really proud of him. Are you building it to last?
No, but he likes playing with it. He was in tears when it broke.
Oh. I've never played with a thing made of Legos.
Oh,
build it
God.
And destroy it.
Oh, that was my favorite thing to play with when I was young. Have adventures with were Legos.
Man. But it's so satisfying to destroy.
Yeah. So the way I would do it is whatever the polished stuff was, for me, it was Blacktron and Mtron and Black. Oof. This is sounding racist.
do your absolute best.
Mtron, I think, and like Blacktron or something like that, which if that's wrong, I'm going to feel just awful that I'm calling those, because those are the bad guys.
Blacktron are the bad guys?
Yeah. So if I'm wrong, this is Mtron and Bull. That's Mtron. Mtron and Black, it just says.
Oh, boy.
That can't be right. Hold on.
What does the M stand for? What do you think?
I don't know. These were like space ones, and I loved them. I thought they were so cool. They had like rovers and stuff like that. Blacktron. Phew. Okay, this is 1990s or 1993, but they're really polished shuttles and things. And those were always the good guys, regardless of whose ship it actually was. And then to the bad guys, I would just make their ship out of whatever bullshit I had left over. Mm-hmm. So like the old castle that we'd gotten in 86 that we hadn't built since we were kids. And then when I'm playing with them and you want to destroy the bad guy's ship, you really get to go for it.
Yeah. Huh. I never imagined Legos as a thing that you like play with. I think you just build it and look at it and then destroy it.
Well, I think you can trace it back probably to the fact that I had a spectacular imagination.
Sure.
I don't know what you were working with at the time, but very, very bright kid, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I mean, I was all about creation.
Ah, and destruction. That's all you wanted. Create and destroy.
Build worlds, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
More like a watchmaker god.
I don't know if that makes me imaginative or anything, just to build, destroy, and then rebuild worlds. I don't know. I'm not going to say that makes me like a god.
Terms of I was more of a micromanager. I wanted to make sure they were doing all the right things once they were built.
Let's see. Do we have anything else to talk about? We've been talking for 52 minutes now.
Yeah, I think we can be done. I gotta find.
Let's just say bye then.
No, wait, we can't.
Mm-hmm.
You see, Dan, I do this thing at the end of the show where I have to go find all of our social information so that people can find us in places when they've burned through all these podcasts in a single day.
Oh no, but I thought they could just find it in the footnotes.
No. So no one can actually access the website, least of all Bacon.
Got it.
So I need to go find that. But in the meantime, I wanted to actually ask you about something that you told me. You had said that, I mean, I knew it was a popular theory recently that police need to regain the public's trust and that it's very difficult for people to trust police because of everything that's been going on. But you said that something that I hadn't heard before, which is this, the public that needs to regain the trust of the law enforcement. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to so much. So here's the thing. The government has mandated proper social distancing practices. Okay. So that means 6 feet apart, wear masks, wear gloves if you have them, cover your coughs and your sneezes. Don't kiss on the mouth as much as we all used to and we all like to do. And don't spit into each other's mouths, certainly. And what this has done by the government mandating these things as not good things to do, as that makes you persona non grata. That means, think about this, the police suddenly have so many more criminals. It used to just be the ones who were doing, like, obvious crimes. But now suddenly two people sitting next to each other on a bench, they're doing crimes. So the cops are understandably overwhelmed by anyone who is doing anything close to each other without masks and with their hands on their eyes, mouth, and nose. And even ears. So, like, just understand that when you walk outside, even if you're holding hands with your sweetie, even if you're going to a grocery store to buy toilet paper for your butthole, a cop sees you and correctly sees you as a potential criminal. So, like, understand that when you walk outside of your building that you are a criminal. And so if a cop wants to shoot you a little bit, that you shouldn't be rude to him or him if he's going to try to do that.
Well dodged. Okay. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Daniel at @DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. That's Soren. You can follow Michael at Make Me Bacon, Please. That's Make Me Bacon and then PLS. Or you can follow Quick Question at @QQ_SorenAndDan. I guarantee no one will read it. Oh no, you know what? He has been checking up on that one. When people respond to that or tweet at it, he has been responding. And you can email us at QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. The show is called Soren and Dan, so it's curious that we have an email address that's QQ with Soren and Daniel. It's life.
Yeah.
And you can also follow, find, or hire our producer and sound engineer and editor, Gabe, at GabeHarder.com. I'm assuming at some point you'll be able to do that.
Yeah.
Gabe, you've had some time alone at home. Have you had time to build your website?
Well, no, but I did determine that I believe what the people can do is go to that website, find the URL, guess which hosting company I'm using, and try to look up the records of who owns that domain. And perhaps from there they could get an outdated mailing address and try to contact me that way.
Great. That's... So you can contact Gabe's parents by finding out what domain, by finding out he's using GoDaddy.
It's like a fun treasure hunt.
Okay, that's it.
All right, Soren, do you think we should, a lot of podcasts do a thing where they like ride out on a song? Should we do that? Do you have a song?
What we just sing it?
No, like you pick a song and then and Gabe will add it in post.
Yeah, that sounds illegal. That sounds illegal.
Oh,
like
it?
We're going to owe somebody money.
Oh, we shouldn't.
Let's
do that,
make though. I am the walrus.
Okay, yeah.
They're not litigious.
No. I mean, like, half of them are fucking dead. So their power has diminished considerably.
Yeah, the rings have been buried and lost to time. All right, bye.